Money and markets. Since our theme is equity markets today, I thought I would start off with a roundup of all the markets. Let's look at what they are. The S&P down now 1.13% for the year. Gold came back this week. It's now down 2.76% for the year. Silver down 1.86%. So that's much improvement from a few weeks ago. Oil now down 39.23%. The plunge in commodities continue. If you look at the CRB index, it's now down 14% for the year. The place that's still above water is Germany, up 6.84%, but that's down from up almost 30% this year. China now down, the China large caps down 9.9%. The developed markets almost flat now. They're up less than 1%, 0.79% for the year. Emerging markets now down 14%, and that's before the Fed raises interest rates. So that, clearly the emerging market's soft. The bond aggregate down 0.5% for the year. TLT, the 20-year Treasury ETF, is now flat. It's down 0.8%, essentially flat for the year. The U.S. dollar index softened a little bit this week, and now it's up 6.1% for the year. That's after being up 12% for the year. Again, I've started to put our money and markets charts that I look at every Sunday night on the Friday close. We put them up on Sunday night, so we want them up by early Monday morning. And those are just charts that I'm looking at to monitor the market, and they change over time. But I thought getting them up would make it much easier for you. And so it's a good practice to, I like to sort of monitor everything according to the Friday weekly close. The China devaluation continues to reverberate around the world. The devaluation, clearly part of it was protecting exports. And then coincidence, the explosion in the fourth largest port closes or harms exports. I don't think that's a coincidence. It's sabotage. The question, of course, is who did it. And the players are many. Of course, you have to look at who got hurt. I put up a little comment on the blog because the picture of the crater created by the explosion at Tianjin is quite significant. It almost takes your breath away. And, you know, it's clearly not just an accidental explosion is what it looks like to me. I did point out, given how much China exports to Europe and Japan and how much the euro and the yen have fallen against the dollar, it's quite remarkable that the Chinese kept their currencies closely pegged to the dollar. All eyes are now on the Fed with the Chinese devaluation because in the July minutes, which were released this week, the Fed still indicated that all the economic conditions that would support an increase in interest rates in September are not yet there. And of course, with just sort of what's happened in the markets over the last week, there's now real questions in the marketplace as to whether or not the Fed's going to raise interest rate. It really puts Yellen in the hot seat because you see pension funds, insurance companies really struggling with no yield, not to mention what it's doing to savers all around the world. My bet is still 60-40. She raises them, so I think the needs of pension funds and insurance companies are going to outweigh the weakness in the global economy, but further deterioration could lower those chances, so I think it's still not a fait accompli. I put up two book reviews this week on topics which are pretty gruesome, following one I did last week, which is pretty gruesome. I think it's important because as I talk with different subscribers about the news, what I'm discovering is that they don't have a good sense of the technologies that are being used to control the markets. Controlling markets really means controlling people and controlling people in a way that scales up to controlling organizations, scaling up to controlling media, scaling up to controlling all sorts of different systems. But you really have to be able to control lots of people and exercise that control one-on-one in invisible ways. And so I thought it's a subtext to many stories, and whenever I'm trying to explain the stories and I find out that the difference between my take on things and someone else's take on things is the what I call the technologies of control, I finally sat down and said, okay, I have to unpack these. I've been looking for lots of different books or DVDs that would explain this. And so I ended up in the last couple of weeks reading about 8 books on the topic. And I put up reviews several weeks ago to Mark Rich, has 3 books, and it was titled Mark Rich, The Nuts and Bolts of Tyranny. And then I found another series by a doctor in San Antonio, Dr. John Hall, called, his most recent book is Guinea Pigs, Technologies of Control, which is a quick and easy overview. A lot of these books come with writing that's very angry. And you can it's clearly understandable why people are angry, but it detracts from learning about them if you're someone who's never experienced them in a either you or someone close to you that you know. Anyway, so those 2 book reviews are up. One is Guinea Pigs, Technologies of Control, and the other is Mark Rich, The Nuts and Bolts of Tyranny. In the Guinea Pigs commentary, there's a video interview of Alex Jones with Dr. John Hall, which is a very good overview. I think it's not too long. It's about 15 minutes. And if you want to get a sense of some of this stuff, listening to that and then reading his book, Guinea Pigs, Technologies, Control, is not a bad idea. The other book review is called The Modern Mercenary, and it's a look at what it means that we now have created private companies that can field armies and the equivalent of a private intelligence agency. This is a very important development. If you look back through history, one of the things that brought us out of the Middle Ages is that we literally created a standard of international law that basically gave sovereign states a monopoly over force. Before then, you had all sorts of aristocrats and feudal lords and the Pope and the Vatican being able to field force and armies. And we're literally going back to a world where armies are not the monopolies of the sovereign state, and you're getting what's called a multipolar world that's very fractured, and many different players who are able to bring highly sophisticated and significant force to bear. To understand that, you need to understand the existence of private armies and intelligence agencies and sort of the history of them and what the big policy issues are. And a guy named Sean McFaith has written a book called The Modern Mercenary, and I wanted to get it because he has significant experience both as a soldier in the U.S. military and then working for a private contractor. And I think faced and lived with a lot of those different policy issues and then became an academic and really studied history and has sort of teed up the issues. So it's a very sobering development. It's a very frightening development. A lot of it really exploded with the U.S. expenditures in Iraq and Iran. So this is going to be a very significant global blowback that gets created by our doing this. Anyway, so those 2 things are a subtext in many other stories because there are a lot of different kinds of control mechanisms that couldn't occur if you didn't have very sophisticated private armies and intelligence agencies, and you didn't have these kinds of invisible technologies. So I think understanding them, I almost apologize and said, I know I'm leading you into the heart of darkness here, but I think it's very, very helpful to understand that this stuff exists. Presidential election. I usually, try and avoid discussing the presidential election, but I confess I have now gotten into significant reading and following of the email issues that are dogging Hillary Clinton, and let me give you some of the reasons why. I am probably the only person you know whose company has spent $1 million on litigation related to email discovery and subpoenas. When you are a significant owner of a private business as an entrepreneur and you have to spend $1 million on email litigation, I assure you, you learn. It's a very arcane little area, but you learn a lot about it. In the middle of doing that, I was finally, in 1998, I was called in for an interview by the Department of Justice, who was investigating us. And this is after we'd spent most of the $1 million. And it was a very interesting discussion because we had numerous of the investigators and auditors asking questions. And it turned out they not only did they not have any evidence of any wrongdoing, they didn't even understand what they were investigating and the basic government programs involved. It was very embarrassing. And the deputy attorney general who was overseeing the whole thing at the end apologized to my attorney and assured them that it was all over. And I had hired an attorney in Texas who was very familiar with black budget litigation. So I called him and I said, oh, good news, it's all over. He said, no. He said, once that guy reports back in, they'll simply demote him and put a new guy on. And the new guy will be a very serious hitman. So sure enough, that's exactly what happened. And the new guy showed up. One of my attorneys used to call him the Sheriff of Nottingham. His name was Rudolph Contreras. And I bring this up because I was reading one of the articles on the various lawsuits related to the Clinton email. One of them is filed in U.S. District Court. And guess who the judge is? None other than the Honorable Rudolph Contreras, who moved over from the Department of Justice to become a U.S. District Judge in 2012. And so I can assure you whatever happens in that lawsuit is going to be based on whoever is pulling the strings and giving the orders. It's going to have nothing to do with the law other than it's important to keep up appearances. And so I was a little bit stunned to see some of the same players. Contreras is not the only same player involved. But here's why I find this all baffling. It's clear that Clinton has not gotten intellectual mastery of the fundamentals, as if she's too important to be bothered. And she clearly didn't have this locked down, either with the people giving her air cover or her base. And she's in serious trouble because that air cover is not protecting her on this. It's clear from the way it's being allowed to bleed that her air covers has not necessarily in full, but has been pulled. Now, Biden wants to run. He's the vice president. There's no love lost between the Clintons and the Obamas. The administration controls the FBI, the Department of Justice, the Department of State. They're all part of the... So that leaves Clinton exposed if that machinery decides to really ensure that Biden gets a clear run. One name that hasn't come up yet is Kerry. Biden's polls are not good, and Kerry clearly has the experience and background, but he is very busy on the Iran deal, which ideally will get done by September 18th. So what it looks like to me is that there is significant gravitas both in the investment community on the Democratic side who's decided Clinton can't go the distance or some such thing and is making room for someone else to move up. It may be that the plunge in commodities is contributing. I suspect it is. There are a lot of large donors on both sides of the aisle that are beginning to feel the need for people highly competent to run the office of the presidency because the environment is clearly getting significantly more dangerous. A combination of global slowdown and plunging commodities is causing a lot of pain. And so on the Democratic side, my guess is you're going to see testing the waters for Biden, or if Biden just can't get there in the polls, Kerry or other variety of other people. On the Republican side, I think that's why you're seeing so much effort to sort of push Kasich forward. It wouldn't surprise me if you're seeing allies all throughout the Anglo-American Alliance and the British Commonwealth trying to make sure that people much more competent to lead the U.S. and be commander-in-chief are pushed into place. It'll be very interesting to see what happens over the next couple of weeks, but it would not surprise me to see Clinton not end up as the candidate. In fact, one possibility, and I'm sure from the text so far that clearly somebody's got the ability to do that. It wouldn't surprise me if she's offered a deal, which is either you step down or there's an indictment. And that's particularly because if they really target her key aides, that's going to get very, very uncomfortable because the politics of targeting them as well as her is really going to put her in a tricky position. So anyway, what it says is that, you know, the election is going to get a lot more interesting than it looked like several months ago. The heat wave. I just finished driving San Francisco to Pasadena to Palm Desert to Phoenix to Tucson, Midland, Texas. then now to Austin, much of the way it was 105 to 117 when I stopped in Palm Desert. They said it had been 118 2 days ago. Everywhere I went, I saw hauling out of retail. I think a lot of that is online sales because many of the stores are reporting just less storefront sales, more rising internet sales. But you do get a sense of a feeling of economic exhaustion, all signs of deflation. Fits with what we're reading on the internet, including exploding demand at food banks and other places as more and more automation, more and more globalization, or people are falling through the tracks. Fall will be the test, so let's see what happens in the fall, because some of this still may be summer. I would note that Illinois just had a technical default on its bonds. It's not a payment default, but a lot, if you look at what's going on in the municipal market, too many situations. Illinois, Puerto Rico are showing signs of serious strain. Of course, Puerto Rico is a lot more than a technical default. They've had a payment default. But I would note Detroit, through bankruptcy, has now come out and sold $245 million of bonds this week. It's the first bond sale since default, and the yield was 4.5%. So there is a place you can get 4.5% in the market. There you are. Some stories I want you to pay attention to for personal reasons. The IRS now says the breach of taxpayers' data was far more widespread than it first thought, 610,000 taxpayers at risk. Please remember, any data you give the government is not secure. There's a wonderful interview. It's an old interview, but it's still relevant, on identity theft in the archive, and it's worth listening to for some really good tips on how to protect yourself from identity theft, which is very important to do. Another story, NSA spying relies on AT&T's extreme willingness to help from ProPublica. There's a rule at Solari, no one can expend any money on AT&T without a personal waiver from me. I suspect that the NSA works for AT&T, not vice versa. The more you kill NSA powers, the more you leave the data to AT&T's control. But in my experience, you know, there are serious problems, some more with the telecoms than others, but the one we get the most complaints about, and I've heard the most complaints, and I've had the worst experiences with, are AT&T, so that one doesn't surprise me. Windows 10, we continue to hear dreadful things about it. I've posted several reviews on the blog. I would beware before you download Windows 10. I think you want to educate yourself on what the issues are and what are in the terms and conditions. I just recommended again to someone today, I find myself doing it at least once every couple of weeks, a documentary we did in Let's Go to the Movies called Terms and Conditions Apply. And when you deal with companies like AT&T and Microsoft, it's very, very important to read the terms and conditions, because you cannot presume the best.